It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Washington urges Moscow to back Ukraine peace effort. President Obama spoke by telephone Tuesday with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin Tuesday, urging him to support a peace agreement to be the subject of an international conference Wednesday in Belarus. White House spokesman Josh Earnest says Russia has been unhelpful to date in resolving the crisis.
They have refused to live up to the commitment that they made to withdraw all troops and weapons from eastern Ukraine. They have refused to live up their commitment to allow effective international monitoring of the international border. They've refused to live up to their commitment to return control of Ukraine's side of that border to the government in Kyiv. They've refused to live up their commitment to free all the hostages.
Mr. Putin is to meet Wednesday with leaders of France, Germany, and Ukraine. Ukraine Tuesday said rocket strikes in the eastern city Kramatorsk killed at least 12, wounded more than 80, and blamed pro-Russian separatists for the violence. Niger has reportedly declared a 15-day state of emergency in Diffa region near Nigeria's border after repeated attacks by the Islamist militant group Boko Haram. Monday, a suicide bomber killed at least 5 people in Diffa. Niger has also voted to send hundreds of troops to join a regional force fighting Boko Haram that includes troops from Nigeria, Chad, Cameroon, and Benin. The insurgent group is reported to also have abducted another 30 people, including 8 girls from Cameroon, and killed 7 hostages in 2 bus hijackings Sunday and Monday in Cameroon and Nigeria. Boko Haram made international headlines last April when it abducted more than 200 schoolgirls from a Nigerian school in Borno State. The whereabouts of most of those girls remains a mystery. Meanwhile, the World Food Program is expressing alarm over the fate of tens of thousands of Nigerian refugees who fled Boko Haram violence into Niger. This is VOA News. The U.S. Embassy in Yemen is closing due to what it's calling the deteriorating security condition since the resignation of the country's president last month. Jen Psaki is a U.S. State Department spokesperson.
We have been reducing staff in Yemen over the past few weeks, as all of you know, given the volatile political and security situation. Our focus, of course, remains on what's in the best interest on the safety and security of our staff.
A Twitter statement says embassy operations are now being suspended and staff relocated out of Sana'a, the capital. U.S. citizens in Yemen are being urged to leave. At the Pentagon Tuesday, Defense spokesman Rear Admiral John Kirby acknowledged Yemen's political unrest is impacting U.S. counterterror capabilities, but said the military is still training some Yemeni forces and could still carry out operations inside the country against suspected al-Qaeda militants.
There's no question, as a result of the political instability in Yemen, that our counterterrorism capabilities have been affected. I couldn't stand up here and tell you that they haven't been. Of course they have been. And I've said before that obviously doing counterterrorism in a foreign country, it's always better to do it when you have an effective, reliable partner. Right now, that partner, the country, the Yemeni security forces and the government to which they report is very much in flux right now.
Shia Muslim Houthi rebels confronted Yemen's President Abd Rabbu Mansour Hadi last month, forcing him and his government to resign. The rebels dissolved parliament and established a presidential council to run the country's affairs. The number of foreign fighters traveling to Syria and Iraq to join the Islamic State or other extremist groups continues to rise despite months of U.S. coalition airstrikes. U.S. counterterror officials say more than 20,000 foreign fighters from more than 90 countries have gone to the region. It's believed at least 3,400 came from Western countries, and that includes over 150 U.S. citizens or residents. Western officials have long been concerned those fighters, especially the ones with U.S. and European passports, could return home radicalized and well-trained to commit terror attacks. In South Sudan, rebels reportedly attacked government positions in 2 oil-producing states, indicating again the latest peace effort may be faltering. The country's defense minister says rebels shelled the town of Benchu, the capital of Unity State, as well as the town of Nasir in Upper Nile State. He says the government forces beat back both rebel attacks. The U.S. Defense Department has confirmed it killed a senior al-Shabaab militant leader, Yusuf Deeg, and one of his associates in a January 31 drone strike. He was identified as al-Shabaab's chief of external operations. Meanwhile, at least a dozen people were killed, 30 wounded Tuesday after a moderate Islamist group clashed with Somali troops. The clashes involved fighters of Alu Sunna Wal Jamaa, who reportedly attacked government bases in the town of Guri El, about 400 kilometers north of Mogadishu. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February 11th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Pressure mounts for increased European Union patrols as migrants freeze to death across the Mediterranean.
The more migrants come, the more difficult it will be to detect smaller boats and rescue them. So it is a very concerning situation indeed.
That's Isabella Cooper of the European Union border agency Frontex. Equatorial Guinea expels hundreds of immigrants after the African Cup of Nations tournament. Can Somalia pull out of its perpetual political crisis as the parliament approves yet another cabinet? And Liberians wait as their Supreme Court is asked to stay this week's Senate pro temp election.
For the Senate to have an election for an unexpired tenure of the Senate pro temp, it violates the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia.
Vandale Patricks is the National Director of Liberia Campaigners for Change. Sierra Leone says Ebola survivors are heroes and heroines. And critics decry Uganda government's decision to send healthcare workers to Trinidad and Tobago. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's sports and our Black History Month and African History Facts of the Day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. At least 29 people are frozen to death trying to cross the Mediterranean from Libya to Italy over the past few days. They were among more than 100 migrants who were plucked from an inflatable life raft off the Libyan coast on Sunday in the midst of extreme weather conditions. The tragedy has spurred renewed calls for the European Union to resume large-scale search and rescue missions across the Mediterranean. Henry Richwell reports from on board an EU patrol vessel off the coast of Sicily.
In temperatures close to freezing and waves 8 meters high, Italian Coast Guard vessels took the migrants on board Sunday. Several had already died from the cold. Many more succumbed to hypothermia on the open decks of the rescue boats. As the Coast Guard vessels returned to the Italian island of Lampedusa, body bags were unloaded onto the dock. Lampedusa's mayor blamed last year's controversial closure of Italy's search and rescue mission for the tragedy. The European Union-run Operation Triton has taken over from the Italian mission, but has fewer vessels and patrols close to the European shoreline. Speaking before the tragedy, Isabella Cooper of the EU border agency Frontex said migrants in peril would still be rescued.
Most of the situations that we have been seeing here require immediate provision of search and rescue. And of course, if such situation emerges, we will go even beyond our operational area to save human lives.
But with fewer resources at its disposal, Cooper says it is impossible for Operation Triton to patrol the entire Mediterranean Sea.
It's over 2.5 million square kilometres large. So it's extremely difficult, if not impossible, to have a full overview of what's happening there. The more migrants come, the more difficult it will be to detect smaller boats and rescue them. So it is a very concerning situation indeed.
A record 170,000 irregular migrants crossed the Mediterranean into Europe in 2014. More than 3,000 died on the journey. In recent months, smugglers have employed a new tactic, packing aging cargo vessels full of hundreds of migrants. Members of the Icelandic crew, aided by the Italian Coast Guard, were winched on board the Ezzedine and it was towed to Italy. The rate of migrant arrivals this year is outpacing 2014. The European Union says the unrest in Libya means migrants are no longer able to use the country as a layover before leaving for Europe. The latest deaths have prompted renewed calls for humanitarian patrols across the Mediterranean. But the European Union is divided over whether such patrols encourage more migrants to risk their lives at sea. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, Pozzallo, Southern Italy.
Equatorial Guinea has expelled hundreds of economic immigrants who took advantage of the just-ended African Cup of Nations football competition to enter the country. The nation has restricted immigration since it became one of Africa's top oil producers and, as such, a destination for unemployed and poor Africans. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Cameroon's border with Equatorial Guinea, where some of the economic immigrants are stranded.
Bueno, yo quiero decir buenos días, Feliz Año Nuevo a toda mi familia en Cameroon.
23-year-old painter Peter Focho learned to greet people in Spanish, one of Equatorial Guinea's two official languages, when he nursed ambitions to leave his native Cameroon for greener pasture. He applied for a visa 3 times, but was refused access to Equatorial Guinea. Focho, like Ebene Diodone from Cameroon's capital Yaoundé, finally got to the city of Bata after convincing Equatorial Guinea consular officials that they were football fans for the 2015 African Cup of Nations tournament. Diodone says immediately after Sunday's final match, they were arrested and deported.
On était en train de vivre une fête africaine. C'est pas normal qu'on demande aux Camerounais de rentrer.
We came here to celebrate Africa's football with other African countries, so it is not normal to ask Cameroonians to leave Equatorial Guinea. We are all members of the Central African Economic and Monetary Community, CEMAC, and as such, have the right to travel to any part of the CEMAC zone, he says. But in the mid-1990s, Equatorial Guinea became one of Sub-Sahara's biggest oil producers and in 2004 was among the world's fastest growing economies. This attracts many poor Africans in the region looking for an opportunity to improve their lives. That was the case with 45-year-old Ndip Augustine, who has again been expelled and is in the Cameroonian border town of Kiosi.
I first came here August. I was caught and sent back because I had no passport and I had no visa. When I was sent back that same year, I told my elder sister that I want to come back here. So I entered still without no visa and no passport.
But Ndip Augustine says while there, he saw a great discrepancy between what the idea of Equatorial Guinea can offer and how the majority of the population still lives in abject poverty. He says he wants others to know it is unlikely they will find a better life.
I would advise them to go back rather than hiding because they built stadiums, they are finished. They constructed roads, they are finished. They constructed houses, they are finished. They should not come here because there's a lot of trouble here.
Some of the expelled Cameroonians are angry that their diplomats are not doing enough to assist them. In response, Cameroon's ambassador to Equatorial Guinea, Mpuel Mbala Lazar, told VOA that international immigration protocols must be respected. Moki, Edwin Kintzika, VOA News, Kiosi, Cameroon.
Liberians are awaiting the decision of the country's Supreme Court, which has been petitioned to stay tomorrow Thursday's election of the president pro tempore of the Liberian Senate. The petition was brought by the Campaigners for Change and the University of Liberia Student Union. The vacancy came about after the defeat of former Senate pro tempore Bwezonga Finlay in the December special senatorial election. Vandalak Patricks is the national director of the Campaigners for Change. He says the Senate is supposed to have election of its officers every 6 years, and to do so now before that time would be in violation of the Liberian Constitution.
We, as civil society organization, the Campaigners for Change, believe that it was prudent to petition the Supreme Court of the Republic of Liberia to interpret Article 47 of the Liberian Constitution, which states that the Senate shall elect once in every 6 years a Senate pro tem to preside over that caucus body. What we are seeing is a gross violation of the Constitution, specifically Article 47, because that constitutional exercise was carried out in 2012 when the former Senate pro tem, Bwezonga Finlay, was democratically elected by 30 duly seated senators for the Senate to have an election for an unexpired tenure of the Senate pro tem. It violates the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia.
You are citing the Constitution, saying that this Senate election might violate the Constitution. The outgoing pro temp of the Senate, Bwezonga Finlay, he was defeated in an election. So what do you want him to do? Stay on? The Senate must move ahead.
Yes, the Constitution is clear, Mr. Boti. The Constitution says, Article 47, that the Senate shall elect once every 6 years the Senate pro tem, interestingly, Article 38 of the Liberian Constitution gave the Senate the right to carve their own rules and procedures, but it should be in conformity with the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia. Specifically, Article 2. Article 2 makes it very clear that any law or statute that is not in conformity with the Constitution of the Republic of Liberia should have no legal effect.
There are those who say, whereas Liberia has the three branches of government, you are asking the Supreme Court to interfere in the business of the Senate.
No, this is not an interference, Mr. Bote. This is a constitutional issue. If it was an interference, then Article 66, which makes it very clear that the Supreme Court should be the final arbiter of justice in terms of constitutional interpretation, an issue that has to do with constitutional issue that is binding on everybody, the Supreme Court is the only branch of government that can interpret. What we are asking the Supreme Court is to interpret, not for the Supreme Court to meld into the affairs of the Senate.
Vandale Patricks is the National Director of Liberia Campaigners for Change. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia, today's Wednesday, February 11th, and you are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butt in Washington, and still to come, Monk Oldman Sports and our Black History and African History Facts of the Day. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. President Barack Obama is expected to announce plans today, Wednesday, to withdraw most of the American troops assigned to battle the Ebola outbreak in West Africa and to declare that the U.S. military effort has been successful. Meanwhile, the government of Sierra Leone has given an update on the ongoing Ebola epidemic. VOA's Jody Kapwa reports.
The Ebola briefing was conducted by Abdoulaye Berete, the National Publicity and Outreach Coordinator in the Office of the Government Spokesman. He says Sierra Leone is coordinating its efforts with neighboring Liberia and Guinea, the other countries hard hit by the disease.
If I may come now to the state of the Ebola virus in Sierra Leone, I must say the fight continues, even though for the months of December and January and up to this point, February 2015, we are having fluctuating cases of a reduction in the number of confirmed cases.
Berete was asked how many lives in Sierra Leone have been lost to Ebola and how many have been saved.
Since the outbreak itself on May 25, 2014, we have lost close to 2,000 plus people to Ebola. And there are other cases, about 300 or so, that are probable deaths. We have also turned over close to 2,000 survivors of the virus.
He calls the survivors heroes and heroines who have undergone psychosocial education. They were told not to engage in unprotected sex for 90 days. He stresses that Ebola does not have to be a death sentence and urges people to report to health clinics if they suspect they have the disease. The Sierra Leonean official says community social mobilization is key to ending the epidemic. He says President Ernest Bai Koroma is touring the country to stress the importance of community involvement, including that of paramount chiefs in tackling the problem. Berete says that due to encouraging news about the outbreak, it's been decided that schools will reopen on March 30th. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Somalia's latest political crisis appears to be over now that lawmakers have approved a new cabinet after a long delay. But the question remains whether Somali leaders can stop the cycle of such crises which have undermined government after government and hurt efforts to stabilize the war-torn country. Abdulaziz Bello has more from Mogadishu.
On Monday, lawmakers endorsed the 66-man cabinet list proposed by new Somali Prime Minister Omar Abdirashid Ali Sharmaki. The approval came as a relief after lawmakers twice voiced strong opposition to Mr. Sharmaki's proposed list of ministers. 191 MPs endorsed the cabinet in a session chaired by the country's parliament speaker. He says 213 MPs voted here today. 191 voted in favor, 22 MPs voted against. As per the constitution, the cabinet has been unanimously endorsed. The country's parliament had remained divided since October when differences between President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud and then Prime Minister Abdiweli Sheikh Ahmed emerged. The dispute led to Ahmed's dismissal and the appointment of Mr. Sharmake. Since then, the new prime minister has faced an uphill task in convincing lawmakers that his cabinet choices will help end Somalia's long-running political crisis. Addressing lawmakers on Monday, he outlined his government's goals for the coming year, with security and preparations for the 2016 elections being at the top of the list. He says, as a government, we will focus on creating a permanent political solution, improve the areas of security, justice, people's welfare, realization of the Vision 2016 plan, national reconciliation, as well as uplifting of the country's infrastructure. Hassan Ali is a Somali political commentator. He says the government must come up with a way to end the differences that always emerge between the leadership. He says, first, the government under Prime Minister Sharmake must have a political vision, and they should be clear on what they do. He says, second, they must completely avoid the differences that always emerge between the top offices, like what we have witnessed for the past 12 years under the transitional government. The government should come up with a strategy now to avoid a repeat of such differences. But observers argue that the parliament must remain neutral in the country's politics. Abdulaziz Bilal for VOA News, Mogadishu.
Uganda's Ministry of Foreign Affairs has put together a program that will send nearly 300 highly skilled healthcare workers to Trinidad and Tobago. Critics say health facilities are already severely understaffed and that more than a million Ugandans will lose their healthcare provider because of the move. Elizabeth Paulat reports from Kampala, Uganda.
For years, Uganda has suffered from a severe lack of healthcare workers. Low recruitment combined with irregular pay and under-equipped facilities have resulted in many workers seeking employment in other fields or moving abroad. The government is now facilitating this process by shortlisting 283 highly skilled health workers to be sent to Trinidad and Tobago for work. Program officials say among them are 185 midwives, 20 of the nation's 28 radiologists, and one of only three of the nation's neurosurgeons. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs is hoping that the program will result in remittances sent home, which will be taxed by the government and will help raise funding for the healthcare sector. Uganda has about one doctor for every 25,000 patients and one nurse for every 11,000 patients. Janet Obuni, president of the Uganda Nurses and Midwives Union, says work abroad programs are attractive because it's common for nurses to go unpaid for up to 6 months at a time. Yet she says sending workers abroad will put many patients in danger. Elizabeth Pola, VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. The African Union has hailed the Confederation of African Football, CAF, Equatorial Guinea, together with the Equatorial Guinea head of state, Obiang Nguema, for staging an Ebola-free Orange Africa Cup of Nations. The Africa Union chairperson, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, disclosed in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. The successful staging of the event underpinned African solidarity to overcome the challenge posed by the outbreak of the Ebola virus, whose epicenter is in the Mano River region in West Africa. Dlamini congratulates Ivory Coast and Ghana for their brilliant display during the Nations Cup final. In Equatorial Guinea, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, Technical Committee named the Orange Africa Cup of Nations a dream team in Bata. They are the best 11 players based on performance at the just-concluded Nations Cup. Tunisian Ayman Mathluthi is goalkeeper. The defenders are Algeria's Aisha Mandi, Ivory Coast's Kolo Touré, Ghanaian Jonathan Mensah, and Cameroon's Henry Bedimo. The midfield consists of South African Sibusiso Vilakazi, together with Ivory Coast's Seri D and Yahya Toure, while the forwards are Ghana's Andre Ayew, along with Ivory Coast's Gervinho and Wilfred Bonny. Staying with the Nations Cup, Algerian coach Christian Goulkoff retains his job despite Algeria not meeting their target of reaching the semifinals at the Nations Cup. The Algeria Football Federation president, Mohamed Raouaraoua, disclosed in the capital, Algiers, on Tuesday. Algeria were eliminated in the Nations Cup quarterfinals by eventual winners Ivory Coast. In contrast, Burkina Faso coach Paul Put was dismissed for the team's poor Nations Cup campaign, while Republic of Congo coach Claude Leroy has resigned. Finally, in handball, the Africa Zone 5 2015 All-Africa Games handball qualifiers gets underway in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia today, Wednesday. The five-day contest features men's and women's teams from Burundi, Djibouti, Egypt, Eritrea, Kenya, Rwanda, Somalia, Sudan, Tanzania, Uganda, and hosts Ethiopia. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. It's time now for our Black History Month and African History Facts for today, February 11th. On this day in Black history, the first fugitive slave law was passed by the United States Congress. The law required that slaves who ran away be captured and brought back to their masters. Those who knew of and did not report runaway slaves could be fined and even jailed. Also on this day in 2012, superstar singer Whitney Houston died at the age of 48 in a Los Angeles hotel the night before the Grammy Awards. Plagued by substance abuse in her later life, Houston had become one of the most popular and celebrated singers in her early career. Did you know that a Virginia slave named Henry Brown escaped to freedom by packaging himself in a wooden box? He made up his mind to escape after his wife, Nancy, and their three children were sold away from him. In March 1849, Brown had a white abolitionist friend named Samuel A. Smith package him in a wooden box and shipped him by Adams Express to anti-slavery headquarters in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. 27 hours later, Brown arrived safely. On this day in African history, 1990, Nelson Mandela of South Africa was released from Victor Verster Prison near Cape Town after 27 years. In 1993, Mandela won the Nobel Prize for Peace for helping to end apartheid and establish a multiracial government in South Africa. Mandela was elected that country's first black president in 1994. He died December 4, 2013. And on this day in African history in 2011, President Hosni Mubarak of Egypt resigned after being in power for 30 years. Mubarak had refused to step down earlier as protesters demanded his removal after weeks of anti-government sentiment. Those are your Black History and African History Facts for today, February 11th. Congratulations to Vish Maharaj of Durban, South Africa, and Kalu Idika Awa of the University of Uyo in Akwa Ibom State, Nigeria. You are the winners of our February 10th question. Which African-American poet wrote the novel The Color Purple? The answer, Alice Walker. Now, here's our question for today, February 11th. Who is the first African-American to be elected national chairman of the U.S. Democratic Party? Once again, who is the first African-American to be elected national chairman of the U.S. Democratic Party? Send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Remember to include your mailing address. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. President Barack Obama is expected to announce plans Wednesday to withdraw most of the American troops assigned to battle the Ebola outbreak in West Africa. That's it for this Wednesday, February 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll continue our collaboration with Channels TV as we examine the election process in Nigeria. Is the political playing field leveled? What's being done to ensure a peaceful, free, fair, and transparent vote? That's next time on VOA Africa.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight, comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the Internet at www.voaafrica.com.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.